Thank you so much for tuning in to Let's Talk, the official podcast of the National Runaway Safe Line, or NRS. At NRS, we operate the federally designated national communication system for youth who have run away, are experiencing homelessness, or who may be considering leaving home. For over 50 years, we've provided crisis support and resources for young people, families, and communities across the nation. In the final episode before we have our National Runaway Prevention Month series, I'm excited to welcome Ajax to the podcast. Ajax is a member of our Youth Advisory Board, but I want to give you the space to introduce yourself whenever you're ready.
My name is Ajax. My pronouns are he, him, and I am a student. I currently am, you could say, like a dual credit kind of school where I go to Dobie High School, and I also go to San Jacinto South Community College. With my current schedule, that's why I say kind of like dual credit, I don't really take any high school classes anymore. I take purely college classes now.
Okay, I got you. So just for a little added context, you are currently 17 and technically still in high school, but you're taking college level classes. Do you already know what it is that you want to do with your college education?
Yeah, I'm planning to go into psychology for my major all the way up into graduate school.
Now, all of the members of our Youth Advisory Board have some form of lived experience with homelessness or running away or a related crisis. Would you mind sharing a little bit about your own experience?
I was in a abusive relationship with my father, and I attempted running away, but it didn't really turn out too well, and I wanted to call the safe line just to like get some form of support. I think I was around, I would say 13. I know it was during Halloween at a certain point. I think it was like 2019.
How did you hear about NRS, and do you remember what it is that made you actually pick up the phone and call?
I found it out by kind of just Googling, I need help. And it was one of the first things that popped up, and it was one of the few services that I did use. I basically ran away from home from my dad because he had taken up my phone. And I know when he takes up my phone, it means he's going to beat me up, punch me, kick me, do anything to like harm me physically and or mentally. So I ran away in that moment knowing what comes next is worse if I don't run away. So I ran away to my friend's house, and my friends didn't really know what to do. So I basically Googled what to do when a kid runs away. And that was like the first thing that pops up, the runaway safe line.
And then fast forward to earlier this year, and you are reaching out to National Runaway Safe Line again, but this time it's to apply to be a part of the Youth Advisory Board, which you have since joined. What has your experience been like on the Youth Advisory Board?
One of the biggest things that I find is, I'm not going to lie, whenever I think of a advisory board, especially for something that is extremely traumatic as runaways, homelessness, suicidal, any one of those, I always thought, dang, those meetings must be kind of depressing. But to see the members be so energetic and happy and overall like joyful, it makes me feel positive and feel content that wherever NRS is going, it's going to be in a positive path, especially with all these youth members like having a voice in what they say. Because I find that a lot of organizations do not emphasize youth voice, despite that the youth is the new generation that's going to take over this world. So it's kind of weird for me to like see an organization actually focus on having youth members talk about their struggles to day-to-day life and the older members listening to what they say and hearing out instead of just kind of like listening and just throwing it out into the trash.
I got you. I'm curious if the compensation aspect of the Youth Advisory Board has any weight on why you joined.
To me, it's kind of just like a one-off deal. I didn't join the advisory board for money. What matters to me is the value of if it helps at least to me one other person who may or may not be in the same scenario I've been. I find that there are so many different scenarios of homelessness, runaways, anything, that you can never take a educated guess on what happens. You have to listen to it completely through. Take an educated guess, and you're making a risk. And any form of risk when it comes to a very sensitive spot like runaway homelessness, it can endanger them or it can help them or both. It can be, it can go any side. And that's what I find like to be compensating for me, seeing the NRS better themselves for people who have been maybe in my positions before, or worse or better. It doesn't really matter to me if it's worse or not.
That's really lovely. So for you, it's really more about watching the organization be able to grow and improve their services and programs, right?
Yes. I couldn't really care less about my personal compensation. I care more about the future compensation, especially with, it's easier for kids now to notice that their family is crumbling and neglectful than it is in the past with all the technology, and it is easier for them to reach out for help. And that's why I find like modern technology so powerful, because it gives you the ability to help. And with all these organizations that are around, it gives them the opportunity to change their life for the better, which is something that's never been there in the past. In the past, you had to physically ask out for help. And I find that in the past, you would 99% of the time still get ignored.
Oh, yeah. And talking to some of the other members in some past podcast episodes, they would definitely echo that sentiment. What's it been like building a relationship with the different members of the Youth Advisory Board? I know that you guys have like a pretty busy group chat that I am lucky to get to be a part of and see. How is that for you?
I personally, for me, I have a very, very busy life outside the advisory board. I have a lot of schooling and work and stuff, so I can't really check the messages 24/7, and I don't check my phone 24/7. So whenever I do check the messages, I kind of just read them like all at once in like massive chunks, and I always find it to be a highlight of my day, just reading like all the positive things that's going through their lives, even if it's just a small thing like it's my birthday today, or oh, I graduated today, or something, something. It's always nice to see a small or big milestone being accomplished, because for these people, those milestones wouldn't have even been a possibility when they were like homeless or runaways. So it's just fun to see it.
Now, you're the youngest member of the Youth Advisory Board, so we, of course, hope that we get to see you grow and change yourself with the organization. What are some things you look forward to or hope to see in the future through the Youth Advisory Board?
Focusing on LGBTQ plus individuals, because not only are they at more risk, they are typically going to be homeless quicker if they are going to out themselves to their parents. And that is one of the things that I find, even in a very supportive area like my area, I find that even closeted kids and teenagers, they still have a hard time coming out just because of what will my mom say? What will my dad say? What will my friends say? What will my teacher say? It would be very nice to see some of my friends not have to struggle just to survive.
Right, because you have experience with that exact thing. Would you mind if we go back a little bit and just talk about your experience with being considered a runaway?
It was actually the opposite. My dad left home and he kind of just left me by myself at his house for long periods of time, and where I couldn't really do much. I didn't really have the money to feed myself. Yes, he was paying the bills for the house, but I didn't have the necessities to survive.
How long was it that your dad was not at home with you?
About 3 years was the longest time he did.
Whoa, 3 years? And you were just home by yourself that whole time?
Yes.
What? Okay. I'm a little at a loss for words. How did you take care of yourself? And like, where did you find nourishment? How did you make yourself feel safe in this situation?
I just went to my friends. That was like the only choice I kind of had at that point. I was very lucky to have a set of friends whose family also knew about my situation and did a lot to help.
Okay, I understand. So was there, did the police ever get involved in this situation, or like Child Protective Services, anything like that?
Yes, I think like at least 4-5 times, I can recall. Every time they were involved, it always ended up as, you're being dramatic, your experiences aren't really that bad. Just get over it. This came from not just CPS and police officers. This came from the school counselors themselves. And so for the longest time, I was trapped there, not even because of my dad, but because of the law enforcement around me.
It's really sad because I have heard that exact thing from other youth advisory board members on this podcast. Why do you think in your situation in particular, they didn't believe you?
Because at that time, they thought, oh, his dad is the only family member he has left in America. Therefore, he is the best option, albeit he wasn't the best option. He was abusive, neglectful, and abandoned me. They didn't believe me because he was just, I guess, able to fake the act of that, oh, he's a caring father, he only wants the best for me, and that they only kind of viewed me as like, oh, this kid only wants to play video games and have fun in life, and he doesn't want to do anything, he just wants to have fun, so that's why he's like trying to break out his dad's chains. It was kind of ironic, because even though I was abandoned by my dad for 3 years, I went to school consistently. Not as consistently as now, where I have more of a stable life, but consistently enough where I was still ranked very high in my school. It's actually kind of funny because school was the most important thing to me. Like, if school wasn't really there, I probably wouldn't have done anything except just goof off and stay home and whatnot. School was like the only thing that was tethering me down to the ground and like not making me go insane.
I understand. So to clarify, throughout the whole 3 year period, there was no like physical or verbal interaction with your dad whatsoever.
Nope. The day that he basically took me from my mom's boyfriend, because I was living with my mom's boyfriend at the time after my mom died, he helped me by for example, I'll give you right now, my phone, my SIM card, the number I have, it's his number that he's paying for. I'm not paying for it. My guardian is not paying for it. It's his number. Another thing is the clothes. He gave me a lot of clothes. He helped me during holidays and stuff. He was like the place I would go to whenever I want to escape my dad's house whenever he wasn't there. Because guess what? Who could watch over me if no one was there? Like, there was no adult supervision. And so I would stay at their house because guess what? There was adult supervision and food. A lot of food. And I knew the second that he, like, came to pick me up and took me to a house and say, you're not going back to the boyfriend, I knew, like, this was going to be torture. And I knew this was not normal. There has been multiple times, I think, like, across the span of, like, 5 years, I tried to plead with almost any adult to, like, hear me out and do something, but most adults didn't have that capability, or if they did, they didn't listen.
If you feel comfortable, would you mind sharing what the experience with CPS was like?
There's been times where I would go to CPS and my dad would beat me up, but the thing is that the skin on my body, the bruises, by the time that CPS would get involved, because they took so long just to get to my case, they would not see any bruises and say, you're fine. Even though they would enter the house, they would see cockroaches everywhere, food all over the table, it's spoiled, the lights are blinking, the water doesn't even work, and who knows how long the roof is leaking. They would be like, this is fine.
When it came to food, did you ever use a program like a drop-in center or a food pantry, anything like that?
Yeah, I think like, to this day, I still have not, I would say the trauma of like, my appetite is sometimes non-existent. Back then, I would like basically eat once a day just to try to conserve as much food as I could. Any snacks I got from school, I would basically devour as much as I can, and I would eat as much as I could at school to try and gather up enough energy for the night. I would sleep a lot just so I can also conserve the energy and not waste it on like doing other stuff. And to this day, it still affects me, where there's been days where I go like 3 days without eating and I feel fine, but then the fourth day hits and I feel like really sluggish.
And there's so many things, even in school, where you need to have like a parent sign a permission slip, or even like where I'm from, to get free or reduced lunch, you still had to have like your parents fill out a form and leave a signature. How did you get around things like that?
I think it was sophomore year that I was classified under the McKinney-Vento Act, which is an act where it classifies a student as unaccompanied that allows them to sign any forms themselves as their legal guardian. Think of it as emancipation, but without emancipation.
Understood. Okay. How did you find out about the McKinney-Vento Act?
My counselors, my high school counselors were doing their best to help me, and they were like, you can get this. This McKinney-Vento Act basically gives me a bunch of services for free. For example, today I went to the bookstore earlier and got two free books from McKinney-Vento. It was at Barnes & Noble, so I got some pretty good books.
What are some of the other benefits you've learned about being able to use the McKinney-Vento Act?
So I currently live in, I live far from my school. It takes about 30 minutes to go to my high school and I think like 25 minutes to go to my college campus. And the McKinney-Vento Act basically says, no matter where you are, they will provide you transportation within reasonable distance. And so I get to school by a bus from the district I am currently residing in, and I have a car that my district pays for that drives me home.
When you first started talking with your high school counselors, what was their advice for you? Like, what did they tell you to focus on, or how did they try to help you just kind of get through the day-to-day?
They told me to like focus on school and they will do the rest. Like, there was a lot of behind the scenes stuff that they had to do, because not only was I alone, unaccompanied, I also didn't have any form of legal documentation. So think of it like, if I had to go get like a checkup every 6 months. I think that's pretty normal for Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Or like go get your dentistry checked, you know, blood work, vaccines, whatever. I basically did not get it for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the thing they were focusing on, getting me some form of healthcare, making sure I had food in the house, making sure that I was living
mm-hmm.
instead of surviving. They offered me a bunch of services, for example, McKinney-Vento, and they knew that they had to call CPS due to certain issues that arose, but they basically did everything they could as a counselor. That was their advice, in the sense. They just told me, focus on school, we'll take care of the rest.
Wow. How would you assess where you are in your life today? How do you feel about the way things turned out with their help?
I kind of think of this as like a fairy tale. Sometimes I'll wake up, I'm like, this is my life now. All right. Like, I sometimes don't believe that this is my life now. I was so used to like living alone and doing everything alone, basically, that even now I'm just like, what? Wait, how are you supposed to do this? Because like, as much as I would love to say that I am smart, I feel like I'm very behind in terms of like emotional intelligence, in a sense of asking for help and being vulnerable in front of others.
I am going to disagree with something you said, because after getting to connect with you through the Youth Advisory Board, I know for sure 100% that you are very smart. Is there anything about your experience that you still hope to change?
I genuinely don't have anything that like I would hope to change or hope to make better. I think I'm pretty happy with everything right now.
Do you have any key takeaways from your experience that you think it would be really important for youth-facing organizations to hear, especially organizations who are dealing with people perhaps under the age of 16?
Listen to every age range. I don't care how small the issue is. I don't care how large the issue is. They should be taken care of no matter what happens. It's not okay for them to compare your situation to another, because everyone has their own limit on what a situation can do to them. Some people have extremely high tolerance, which is not necessarily the best. And some people have extremely low tolerance, which also isn't necessarily the best, but they're both situations that they should be taken care of. The more you deny them, the more psychological impact it will have on them. They will learn to not trust others as much. They will learn to resent organizations, and they will learn to say that this organization is bad. I actually would have another advice. Your friends will be your biggest key to almost everything you do. A support system is necessary for situations like that, and it's extremely important to have a support system. Everyone can always say, oh, I'll be fine. I don't need a support system. I can do it. I've gone through blank, blank, and X, and Y, and Z. I've gone through it before. Yes, but each time you go through it, you get more traumatized, your feelings get bottled up, and you don't really get anywhere. You kind of just stay in one spot. If anything, you go backwards. So a support system is very, very crucial. I don't think I would have survived if I didn't have a support system back then, quite literally. Let's see. Find something you're passionate about. Even in the worst moments, find something that you enjoy doing. For me at the time, it was school, and that was like what I said, what kept me going through my life at the time. If I didn't have that, I think it would have been really difficult for me. That's my biggest advice. Find something to be passionate about.
Ajax, I so appreciate you taking the opportunity to come speak with us about your experience today. I know it's going to help so many people, and I really appreciate your honesty and your positivity. And I also want to thank everyone for listening to the Let's Talk podcast today, and formally invite you to continue listening as we enter November, which is National Runaway Prevention Month. Each November, we feature four different organizations on the Let's Talk podcast and talk about the ways they're making a difference in their community. There is a new episode every week in November, so I hope you're excited and ready to learn with us on this journey. Thank you again.